Groove.com is better than pie.
That's the way I like it. Yeah. My garden's a secret compartment. And that's the way I like it. And that's the way I like it. Well, welcome back to the Two Blind Squirrels. Tonight we've got a guest blind squirrel. In fact, I have bludgeoned his eyes myself just for this show. It's Dan Shepherd.
How are you doing tonight, Brad?
Good. How are you?
I'm great.
Great. Are you excited to be on the show?
You know what? You know, as I think, you know, everyone says on shows, right? Long-time listener, first-time caller, right? So I'm excited.
We don't say that on this show.
Well, I know. On other shows, you hear folks on the radio, they'll say, long-time listener, first-time caller.
Yes, but we delame this show, so you can't say that. I'm sorry.
There you go.
We have delaming devices built into the software. All right. Well, enough of that. Listen, Dan Shepherd, tell exactly what your title is, the organization you work for, and we'll just start with there.
Well, I'm the vice president at Vision Trust International. That's the short version. My title's a little more complicated than that. It's basically operations in the U.S. and special projects and missions internationally. That's the long version of it.
Wow, that's a mouthful.
It is a mouthful, and sometimes it doesn't fit on a business card, so you leave most of it off.
You print it on the first and the back. Okay, well, so first of all, a little history. What is your background in? I mean, did you go to school to? Well, first of all, what is Vision Trust?
Well, that's a great question, Brad. And I know that, you know, you and I have talked, you know, in person. So
right.
I'll just kind of share. Vision Trust is an organization in the United States that serves orphan and neglected children in the third world and the developing world. So we do that in various ways. One is through school programs. Where kids from that may be orphaned or from very impoverished areas will have the opportunity to go to Christian school if there is no school in that area. After-school programs where there's discipleship and tutoring and food programs, health care as well. And the last one, and actually sometimes least desirable, is through kind of classic orphanages in areas where kids are you know, have lost both their parents and have no family structure to help take care of them. And in those instances, we, you know, provide end-to-end care for these kids, you know, a place to sleep, clothing, food, education, health care, as well as, you know, provide just a loving environment for them to grow up in.
Wow. Now, that's a lot. Now, going back to my original question, how did you become involved with Vision Trust? Did you go to school to be involved in a charity like this, or?
Yeah, it's a great question. Actually, it's somewhat of a funny story. Is that I've always been very interested in foreign missions, and it's definitely not the career background I came from, but I'm actually a former technology guy who worked for
geek.
Say what?
What? Nothing. Nothing.
We'll just say it was Microsoft. So
oh, okay.
I'm a former Microsoft employee for about 9 years there, and a gentleman who worked there had actually left our company to become the president of Vision Trust. And he and I barely knew each other. And when he left, I just sort of told him, oh, how nice for you. You know, great. I'm so excited for you. And gave him a little pat on the back. And probably, you know, a year or two later, he had actually invited me on a missions team to the Dominican Republic in a little area there called Herrera. And really, after our my first trip with them, I really fell in love with working with the kids, fell in love with the organization, and simply became a volunteer who became a volunteer more frequently and more often and longer term and deeper engaged, until really just one day the conversation came up that was, why don't you come and work here full time? And now the thing that was my really part-time hobby and passion has become my full-time passion that I'm able to really devote every hour of the day to. So it's absolutely just, to me, amazing to be able to do something I love this much.
That's great. So you don't even have to work anymore.
It's definitely a lot of work. It's an amazing amount of work, and we're always very busy. There's a reason to get up in the morning as opposed to you're just going to work.
Right. If I could just, and I'll do whatever the Lord wants me to do. And right now he's provided a wonderful job for me to support all of my ministry work. So I'll be happy to do that.
A very similar background, right, is that, working in the corporate world, it was really it started off as a sort of a platform for funding, and then it really turned into, a really great place to launch from, with a great number of friends who are still in that, who are still in the industry, who are still in, the corporate world, who have just been, fantastic supporters, just through prayer. Some of them have been financial supporters of the organization, and I'm really blessed to have come from that environment.
Fantastic. So tell me a little bit about what you do, about your work. I mean, what is, you've kind of given me a description of what Vision Trust is all about, but what do you do?
Yeah, so the short version is that, a lot of people in different jobs have, I'm sure you probably have it in your job title too, or your job description, at the end of all your assigned tasks, it says, and other duties as required, right? I would say that probably my job actually starts off with that, other duties as required, and I say that a little bit jokingly, but when I'm in the United States, my job is U.S. operations, where I'm very much focused on the operations of our ministry, being good stewards of what God has entrusted us with, making sure that just our U.S. operations are running well. When I'm overseas, I tend to be focused more on special projects. An example, and those could be, very wide-ranging. Examples are, we're building a learning center, basically an after-school program, as well as nutrition center, as well as a place for health care in a little part of Thailand called Wei Malay.
Wow.
And I'm helping to manage some of the, some of the project management behind that. I've got a project coming up in a few months in Central African Republic on a satellite-based internet communication, as well as power for an orphan care center that's completely, I'd like to say, off the grid.
Mm-hmm.
There were a grid to be connected to. So, solar power, generators, batteries for power storage and inverters and those types of wonderful, complicated things. And then there are other projects that are, something as simple as, setting up the standards and practices for a food distribution program worldwide, where we may have a partner agency who's just really blessed us with donations of food, and putting the practices and the standards in place that we're able to feed thousands of kids in a very structured way to make sure they're getting the proper nutrition they need in these countries. So it is other duties as required, and then a set of things that are definitely a little more structured. So it really varies upon where I'm at in the world.
Wow. Well, let me ask you. I'm going to ask you in a minute to tell me a funny travel story, since you travel all over the world.
Okay.
You're bound to have some interesting tidbits. But before I get to that, I want to ask you what is it you would like for me and my listeners and Faith. What is what would you like for us to take away from this interview as just knowledge? What do you want us to know? What can you pass on to us that will help us, even if it's not through Vision Trust, view the world differently and maybe view our ministries in a, you know, that we can sort of apply to our own personal ministries to help or to change our focus or to, you know, just to guide us in that decision making?
That's a great question. You know, when we look at it kind of internally from our, you know, our ministry focus and what we do on a daily basis that, you know, we're doing around the world, it always kind of boils down to one thing. And there's different, I guess I would say, different implementations of how this works. And I'll maybe go on a little bit of theology tangent here. You know, that in James 1:27, the verse is, you know, pure religion is this: to visit orphans and widows in their distress and to keep oneself unspotted from the world. Different translations will say it different ways.
Right.
But it all comes down to really one thing that it's talking about in that verse, which is really reaching out to those who you can't get any benefit back from. We see it, you know, throughout Scripture from Exodus all the way through all the epistles, through the gospel. It's always about, you know, what is the way that I can serve someone where I don't have anything to gain from? We see in the Old Testament God's command to serve the orphan. We see his commands to serve those who are, he refers to as aliens among us, you know, people who are not necessarily, you know, like everybody else, who may not always blend into the culture. It may be people that have disabilities. Actually, you know, we find specific examples in Scripture where God has told us to do things to help people or to not do things to be a hindrance to them. And I guess the one takeaway really is that, right, that God's heart is always in helping and caring for those who, number one, can't help themselves, and number two, we have nothing to gain from. And that really is, if we look at really kind of God's relationship to us, is that, you know, again, not to go on a theology tangent here, is that, you know, Scripture says, like, while we were yet sinners, that's when Christ died for us. It wasn't when God had anything to gain from us. There was nothing we had to offer. It was a one-way transaction where he gave to us with nothing in return.
So James 1:27 is really telling us to be like Christ, to help those who can't help us, where there's, to help those strictly out of love and with no selfishness involved.
Exactly. And if you look at, and that's too, I always remind people to end of the verse, which says to keep yourself unspotted from the world, right? Which is not to, you know, not just to love people, but to be doing it for the right motivation. Right? Because,
yeah,
you know, there are a lot of people who I think do good things where there's good results, but sometimes the motivation's not there, right? And that's the other side.
Right. Yep.
And I guess that's the one takeaway.
Now, does this ever leave you empty? Do you ever get so exhausted from this that you know, you just got to take some time away? You sent me two videos. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
One of them you warned me not to watch. I didn't watch that one.
Okay.
But the other one was bad enough. I mean, you know, just watching the video makes you feel like you're just horrible for complaining about anything, you know. And I watched another special the other day about the AIDS in Africa and just about all the orphans that are there. And it wasn't from you. This was just something just a documentary I watched. And just the millions of orphans that are there that are being raised or that are growing up. Now, they're not being raised. They're just growing up without parents, without any kind of guidance. And, you know, it makes you feel just, I don't know if it makes you feel empty, but for me, it motivated me to want to really reach out and shut up about my complaining and reach out and do something. But for somebody like you that's involved in it on a daily basis and trying to motivate Christians to help, do you get tired?
You know, it's. I think that the answer would be yes if I only saw one part of the picture. You know, if all you see is the, you know, the need and the suffering and the what looks like on the surface to be a losing battle, it can be very tiring. And there definitely are times when, you know, if you focus on that, that's where your mind goes. However, at the same time, the part that's always refreshing is when you see the change that happens in people's lives. That's really what sort of brings you back around to what the point of the work is. I'll give you an example. There is there's so many examples. I'm trying to think of just one. In Central African Republic, just a few months ago, I met a young man who he was actually a teacher for other children who were orphaned. Most of these kids were either AIDS orphans, or some of their parents had been killed in wars or violence or through just disease. And this young man, I think he was 19 or 20, if I remember right, he actually was an orphan just like the kids that he was serving. And when you see kind of how God can take somebody's life and what would apparently be desperate circumstances with really, you know, very limited opportunity and no hope, and you see them able to not just survive the situation, but really thrive and grow into, you know, just an amazing, you know, a young adult who's then able to really invest in the lives of other kids and give them an opportunity and a hope to become something more than they could without that relationship. Those are the kind of things that always really encourage me and keep me going. You know, things like that, or when I see, you know, when I see things like the former gang members in neighborhoods who now, you know, paint flowered murals on the walls of schools and have their children attending our projects. Those are the kind of things that, you know, encourage me and refresh me and keep me going. Because you know that not every story ends great, but you see God at work and you see enough impact and you see one person's life change here and one person's life change here and them affecting 10 or 20 or 100 more. And that really keeps you going.
Do you get frustrated with trying do you deal with, I mean, I'm trying to think back to your description. Do you actually deal with trying to get people involved in helping, or are you strictly over there kind of organizing?
Nope, we get people actively involved in helping, right?
Okay.
A big part of really everyone's job that I work with, we have folks who focus 100% on it, but there are, you know, everyone's job is what we kind of call advocacy or, you know, encouraging the local church. And so it definitely is something that I do, whether it's my, you know, the church I attend here or my home church from where I'm from originally, or, you know, friends' churches, or, you know, you happen to know a pastor here who's a friend, or, you know, a Christian leader in business. That's part of my daily job, yeah.
Okay. Well, enough about you. Let's talk about me. Seriously,
that's a great country song.
Seriously, how can we, or you know, what? How can we get involved and help? Or what can we do to help Vision Trust, to help you? You know, what? How can we get involved?
Well, if I had to really break it down into three things, which whenever I say there's three things, I always joke that any good church service has three fast songs, three slow songs, and a 3-point sermon. And I'm not sure if you've got your songs queued up, but if there had to be really three kind of takeaways, it would be number one, you know, just be a voice for the orphans, right? Orphans in general, the kids that Vision Trust cares for, you know, around the world, there's somewhere between, depending upon whose study you read, the number varies, somewhere between 135 and 150 million orphans in the world, which is just an incredibly unfathomable number.
Yes, it is.
And, you know, way you can do that is, you know, be able to, you know, if you have a Bible study you're a part of or your church, try to encourage your pastor to get involved, to be an advocate for the orphans, to care for them in any number of ways. Those ways could be, and this kind of maybe point number two, financially, right? A lot of kids need sponsorship. Their projects may need, you know, I mentioned some of these things we're doing internationally. These things always need support of local churches and individuals to help fund the work. You know, we have thousands of kids who are really looking for not just financial support from a sponsorship standpoint, but also a relationship with someone who really cares for them and can really be connected to them. And probably the third way, and this is one that on one hand I would encourage people to do, and on the other hand, I would say that if you don't want your heart to change, don't do it. And that's actually go in person and get your hands dirty and, you know, serve these communities and these kids in person.
How would somebody do that?
Go ahead, Brad. What's that?
How would somebody do that?
Well, that's actually in the countries we work in, we actually have teams that actually go as short-term missions teams some of them on a regular basis, some of them on a more scheduled as-needed basis, to be able to go to these projects and do anything from vacation Bible school, if that's your gifting and your calling, to you know, a lot of people have industrial trades, maybe they're plumbers or construction workers. We always need extra hands for, you know, building walls or laying slabs and buildings. You know, sometimes there are projects where we may have an example is I'm actually going to a deaf school in the Dominican Republic in July with a group of school teachers in the U.S. who focus on teaching people to teach deaf children. And so they'll be working with our staff in the Dominican Republic to teach them how to teach the deaf children who are in their own country. And so there's many, many ways. And if anyone's interested on the visiontrust.org website, there's a short-term missions team link on the left-hand side where they're able to see the teams that are coming up. And at the same time, if somebody says, you know what, I have a group of friends and we really have, you know, we'd really love to get involved in this way, but our skill set is we may be pediatric nurses. I'm making that up because it's a great example. And they want to go to Thailand. Those are the kind of skill sets that really are always needed. And, you know, scheduling aside, you know, we are able to help coordinate that because the need is so great in other countries.
So if somebody's got a Sunday school group and they get four or five guys that are willing to go work or something, they can sign up together as a group and go as a group?
Yeah, they could sign up as a group, or they could join into another team as well. In fact, we've had you know, I mentioned a little bit of my former career. We've actually had teams before that are made up of technology guys who are going to put in computer labs as well as do some renovation to buildings. Combine those with you know, a group from local churches in the area that then go together. You know, the men who are interested in doing the construction work and some of the technology work do that. The ladies who were able to help with some of the hands-on child education things are able to help with those things. So we're actually able to combine different skill sets and blend them to really help fill several needs at one time.
So do you guys just help these people plan it, or do you actually plan it for them? Say, meet my guy we'll meet you at the airport, you know, at this time, and we will take you to the place where you need to be working. I mean, how involved does Vision Trust get in the actual planning of the mission?
It's a good question. So, I don't know if I mentioned it, but in the same way that the project internationally is really owned by the local church there in that country, the teams are really owned by the local church or the individuals here in the U.S. What we do is provide guidance on here's the need, here's the scope of what the work is going to be. We will actually help do everything from coordinate airfare to transportation and translators and hotels or staying in the church or whatever the case may be based upon the project, and really handle it end from end. And at the same time, there's always a Vision Trust staff member who goes with you because
Oh, that's
you know,
great.
You really don't want to be in you know, you don't want to be in the Central African Republic and not speak the language,
right?
You not know where anything's at, not be able to recognize your driver or your translator when you meet them. So it's, you know, it's one of those things we're able to help coordinate as well as work side by side and provide guidance while we're there.
Well, sounds like you've really thought this thing out. Now, so just to review, that what we can do is we can be a voice just with everybody that just be a voice with everybody that we know. We can encourage our church and we can actually go on a mission ourselves.
Yep, absolutely. And also, and the middle piece there was that, you know, you always have the ability to, if you want to form a connection one-on-one with a child, the ability to sponsor a kid and really, you know, sow into their life personally.
Okay, well, can you go into a little detail more about sponsoring a child? So is this sort of like we see like Christian's Children's Fund where you have a child you communicate with? Is it sort of like that?
It's, I would say it's sort of like that. The difference being is, and this is, it's just different organizations have different models of how they work.
Right.
As I've never worked in any of these other places, I only sort of peripherally understand the way they all, how all their models are set up. But just to give an example that our model of working with the children is that our end goal is that these kids are able to grow up and be mature Christians in their own culture. And typically what that means is that these kids, we start working with them at a very early age, maybe some of them when they're newborns, perhaps, you know, if their parents have abandoned them or their parents have died, some of them when they're preschool ages, is pretty typical. And we try to keep engaged with these kids until the point where they are that mature Christian able to live within their own culture. And with that, sometimes that means that we work with the kids until they are 16 years old, because in the country they live in, that's the age when they become adults, they're out of high school, they typically go and, you know, learn a trade or whatever the case may be. In other countries, that may mean that we actually stay with those kids through high school. We actually have an education program where we help with college or trade schools, where if one of these people who these kids that we've known since they're 2 years old decides that they want to go to Bible college or they want to go to medical school or, you know, you insert any potential trade there, and we help fund that through scholarships as well. So with that said, the way that our relationship works from a sponsoring standpoint is if somebody really says that, you know, here's a child that may have no positive Christian parenting in their life, right? There are people who work at the project with them or work at the school who are helping mm-hmm. disciple them, but their own parents may be gone or their own parents may be very abusive and not really providing a loving environment. In those cases, what we're really trying to build is a connection with the kid, personally, where you're able to, you know, as you mentioned, correspondence, you know, there's sponsorship money monthly that goes to help that project, to help provide them with the food and education and health care and, you know, their daily necessities. As well as, you know, when you combine that kind of with the other parts of what we do as an organization, like our service teams, there have been opportunities where I've traveled to projects as part of a team or just working, you know, in another country as part of our normal daily work, where I'm actually able to meet children that my family sponsors, or I've had people on my team who actually now have a one-on-one relationship with the child that they sponsor, and they get to know them personally.
Wow.
As opposed to it's a picture that's on the refrigerator, this is a kid I know, and this is a kid that I've seen, you know, maybe every other year over the course of, you know, over the course of 5 or 6 years, and you start to really know who that person is, and, you know, they become like part of your family.
Yeah. Wow. That's cool. That gives you a level of involvement that maybe you don't get with the other project, with the other stuff.
Yeah, and that's actually why I kind of said that, you know, if somebody doesn't want their heart to be changed,
don't do that.
Going to these projects is not the thing to do, because honestly, when it was me, you know, when I was that guy on my first team, I was like, oh, I'm just going here to do a project. You know, it's going to be fun. We'll, you know, we'll go down here to the Dominican Republic where it's 100 degrees every day and 100% humidity, and we'll just get some work done, and it'll be fantastic. And, you know, really, my first day there, and, you know, after spending a little bit of time with the kids and, you know, some time with the adults there and just really kind of, you know, getting a, you know, a look at what's going on inside their hearts, that then basically, you know, I don't know if you ever read Kay Warren or, you know, her Rick or her husband, you know, but Kay has a saying that is gloriously ruined, right? That's the kind of thing that basically ruins your view of the world. And, you know, you really have one of two options, right? You either become hard to it or you become basically broken in a way that you can't live normally if you don't do something about it.
Right. Exactly. Well, tell me what the nomination is just sponsored by. I mean, are you guys a Lutheran organization or a Catholic organization or?
That's a great question. So we've got folks who work for our organization from all different backgrounds. We have people who are Southern Baptists. We have people who are Pentecostal who work with us. We have people who are Grace Brethren. We have people who are Lutheran and Methodist and Episcopalian, and you know, you pick the denomination, right? It's we're working with you know, Christians who are like-minded, whose end goal is to serve the kids across denominational boundaries.
So you're not non-denominational; you're cross-denominational.
Those are interesting words, right? Because it's, you know, there's always this conversation of what is non-denominational versus interdenominational versus cross-denominational. I would probably put us, you know, at cross-denominational because, you know, we'll have times where you may have a team from the United States go to a project. The team may be all Southern Baptist, and they go to a project that's an Assemblies of God project in Peru, and they probably had never been to an Assemblies of God church in their life. Or you may have someone who is from the United States who may be from, you know, I'll use the reverse, right, who may be from an Assemblies of God background, who then goes to Evangelical Church of India project in India, which is very, you know, very much a traditional church from a worship style as well as, you know, the way their services are run. And, you know, the beautiful thing about it is that, you know, God's kingdom really transcends the different denominational boundaries.
Christ says we were all one in the body, right?
Exactly.
Well, so I'm out of serious questions. Is there anything else that you would like?
Serious questions? You asked what was the best travel story.
Yeah, give me a good travel story.
Okay, this travel story is a little bit funny. I'm not going to name any names, right, to protect the innocent.
Okay.
I was, this is actually a Dominican Republic story. I was in the Dominican Republic with some friends from my home church and leading a missions team there. And from down the hallway of the local hotel we were staying at, I hear these screams of just absolute terror come from the a room down the hall. And so I and several other people went down the hall to see what these, you know, these obviously horrified screams were. And there was a good friend of mine and her teenage daughter were hiding under, like, each other's arms on top of their bed in the hotel room trying to hide from something. And the question came, was like, what are you guys hiding from? And another friend who was there happened to have her camera that she had recorded the video of, and the video was of them screaming and hiding in terror from what they believed was a giant bat that was caught in their curtains. And this bat actually turned out to be a moth.
A moth?
it was fluttering around. Now, I don't know if I mentioned that, but my friend actually was a Spanish teacher, and she did give me permission to upload the video to YouTube just so she could be kind of formally embarrassed in front of her students. I don't know if that's my best story, but probably one of the funnier ones.
So beware of the giant moths.
the funny thing is, though, is actually at the gift shops for tourists in the Dominican Republic, they actually sell that same moth, those same moths mounted to like a board or a plaque, whatever you'd call it. And they are pretty big. I see they're probably about a 9-inch wingspan.
Yeah, blood-sucking moths are not funny.
So Mothra.
Mothra. Well, Dan, so did your parents, I mean, you really are, sounds like you're being the exact definition of a shepherd to me. And you're shepherding Christians to doing the right thing, and you're shepherding these young orphans and widows in these other countries. Did your parents know they were, you know, I mean, did your parents have this in mind when they named, did you change your name when you decided to become a missionary? I mean, what happened there?
No, I was born with this name.
Oh, okay. Well,
yeah, it's I don't think my parents had any, you know, had any special revelation that anything like this was going to happen. if anything, right, at the time when making the career change, for lack of a better word, you know, most people's feedback was, well, are you sure that's what you want to do? You know, is that really a wise thing to do? And really, I have to say that my mom and my dad were both very, very supportive, right? They had a lot of questions for me, but definitely a great encouragement and, you know, just supportive in more ways than one of the decision we had made as a family.
Well, I'm sure you were just following the money, so, you know.
No.
All right, so at Vision Trust, we can learn how to get involved in a mission, how to support a child. Can we just send money? Up until recently, that's the Americans' favorite thing to do.
Well, that's a possibility. I mean, it's always, you know, it is possible to give money directly, and that's always welcome. You know,
but Vision Trust is, I mean, they'll take money, and I'm sure they'll use it wisely, but they're really looking for more human type resources.
I would say that the perfect relationship really is, you know, in the same way we try to build a long-term relationship with somebody, you know, in the countries we work in, we really try to build that same relationship with churches or individuals here where they're able to really do those things I talk about, right? Where they're able to be advocates, where, you know, where when they're able and when they have the financial resources to invest in their work financially, that they're able to build relationships with those kids, that they're able to, you know, to go on teams if that's where their heart is and they're able to do those things. So I guess the short version to all the questions, the short answer is really yes to all those. Is that you know, we don't just want to change the lives of the kids. We want to really help, you know, people in this country be obedient to God's call throughout Scripture to help serve these kids. And so we really want to try to help build all the facets of that relationship, not just a one-time financial transaction. At the same time, you know, that would be, you know, we're grateful for those gifts and, you know, we're thankful and try to be good stewards of it. But what we're really longing for is to really build a relationship with people on both sides of the world.
Well, it sounds fantastic. And it sounds like the right, I mean, it sounds like the, I hate to, you know, it sounds cliche, but it does sound like the Christian way to run something, the way to run a charity, you know, like this. If we're reaching out because Jesus told us to, we might as well do it the way he wants us to do it, which is through relationships and through people, not just through throwing money at a situation. And that doesn't mean that you don't need money to run, but I just really respect the way that your organization is put together and the way it reaches out from the packet, the way it's designed and the way it works. Through my experience of just talking with you, it is consistently about being personal and being upfront and trying to get you know, and build relationships and trying to get people involved. And that's, you know, that's very refreshing. You know, I don't do this. I'm not an interviewer. I hope that I haven't slaughtered this thing, but I really believe in what you're doing, and I like the way that it's being done, and so I wanted to give you as much time as I could. Is there anything that I haven't asked that you would like to convey or that you would like to get out?
I think we probably covered everything. You know, I just You know, I just want to thank you, Brad, just for you know, giving me the chance to talk. You know, thank you, too, for just your time when we met before in Dallas. And just, you know, one other thing, too, is that, and I think I share this with you, right, there are a lot of organizations out there, right? And, you know, we're trying to work side by side with them, right? Different ones have different gifts and calling. You know, we have partners that we work with who just drill wells, right? And that's their historic ministry, and we've partnered with them in some countries to help with orphan care projects that they really had a heart for. Or, you know, we have friends who run ministries in the United States where they're reaching out to you know, at-risk kids or kids in the foster care program, and we're trying to partner with them to continue to be advocates in all facets of the orphan care and the at-risk kids crisis around the world. So, you know, that's it's something to keep in mind too, right? Is that we're not just trying to work alone and being a lone voice. We're really trying to engage with the whole community of people who are working together.
Yes. That's awesome. And I think, again, that just goes to show what I just said. I mean, that's the way it should be done. And you shouldn't be exclusionary, or I'm not going to work with them because they work with those other people. Or, you know, that's what I really like about your organization, that they're not just interdenominational, but also just, you know, you cross all those borders in a Christian way with love. And even if, you know, I don't want to go into that. But anyway, I respect it. All right. Do you have a book besides the Bible that you've read that really changed your life? Maybe that you highly recommend.
You know, that's a little bit of a loaded question. I've got there's probably three or four books that historically I just absolutely love. You know, the Bible number one, and then there's a few others, but there's actually a book that I would really strongly recommend that you're not going to be able to find it. You're not going to find it on Amazon or at Borders or anything like that. But it's a book actually a friend of mine wrote who actually works in our ministry. It's called Pure Religion, and really it does just an amazing job of really framing up kind of the problem in the world of poverty and orphans and health care, and really the biblical call to respond. My friend Jim is actually the writer of it.
What's his name? Actually,
he refers to it as a large pamphlet and not a book. But it's
what's the author's name?
If somebody's interested in, you know, kind of advocating or communicating with their pastor, it's definitely one that would really be, you know, a good handbook to, you know, probably in 2 hours read from front to back and be able to really tell that story.
It's Pure Religion by who?
Jim Ross is my friend who wrote it. It's actually not credited to him. It's credited to Anonymous on the book. If anybody wanted one, you know, just shoot me, you know, say, you know, I'm really interested in being an advocate for orphans, and, you know, here's why. Okay. Shoot me an email message.
Yeah, you can email me at comments@twoblindsquirrels.com and ask for Pure Religion,
yep.
The book that Dan Shepherd was talking about, and I'll make sure that he gets that and you get the book. In fact, I'll see if I can get a couple of copies just so I have them. All right, Dan, anything else?
Yeah, actually, I'm gonna recant just a second. I actually mistitled my friend's book. I just picked up a copy of it in my hand here. It's True Religion. I apologize, Jim.
Okay, True Religion. All right. So if you'd like a copy of that, get in touch with me at comments@twoblindsquirrels.com, and I'll make sure that you get one. Anything else?
I think that's it, Brad.
And they're $150 a copy.
I know that you guys are probably by the time this airs, you guys will be on your way home from vacation. So hope you had a good vacation.
I hope we did too. All right, Dan. Well, thank you very much for joining us. And I'll let you do the honors of saying goodnight.
Hey, goodbye, everybody. And actually, I always wanted to say, Two Blind Squirrels, it's better than pie.
It's gooder than pie.
Gooder than pie.
Gooder than pie.
It's gooder than my my English, apparently.
Okay, one more time so I can sample it out.
Two Blind Squirrels, it's gooder than pie.
There you go. Vaya con Dios, everybody.